Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight for a discussion of Riddick by the man who can see in the dark, Mark Ahn.
How's it going, everybody? Summer's not over until I can't wear shorts outside.
Summer's not over because Riddick says it's not.
No, it's not.
Over. You can find our website at fthismovie.net. You should follow us on Twitter. We are at FThisMovie. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/FThisMovie. And as always, you can email us show suggestions, questions, comments, whatever, at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com.
I'd like to welcome, I feel like we've been a little bit exposed. That came out wrong. I feel like more people are finding out about our podcast.
Yes.
More people finding out about FThisMovie, which is really great. So, welcome, whoever.
Yes, welcome,
is new.
New
if you're
listeners.
Like new to this, it's like
for
hey,
sure
how's
someone
it going?
Is like, I have to listen to the Riddick show
yeah, exactly.
First.
This is the first one that's come out. Why start at Young Guns when I can start at Riddick?
This is drawing new people to the podcast, basically an hour-long conversation about Riddick. Yeah. As is usually the case with new release movies, we'll try and talk spoiler-free for a little while so you can listen in, hear our thoughts on Riddick if you haven't seen the movie, and then tune out if you have seen the movie, or if you plan to never see the movie, go ahead and listen all the way to the end.
Sure.
No, we won't be spoiling anything for you.
Wait, I've got 40 more minutes left on this train ride. Yeah. I'll keep listening.
Yeah, you kind of can. Not that, you know, Riddick's not a movie of major spoilers.
Yeah.
But before we talk about Riddick, Mark.
Hey.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I have, actually.
All right.
I'll talk about just a couple of them. I'm trying to think what hasn't been talked about on the podcast necessarily. I saw The Grandmaster.
Okay.
Which was the other... It's still out in theaters.
Yes. And you have a column about that.
I did. I wrote about it.
People can read that at fthismovie.net.
Yeah, that'll be up sometime next week, this coming week.
It may be up by the time this runs.
Ooh.
Well, who knows?
Well, that's fine.
We're trying to see the future, everyone.
So I saw that, which is Wong Kar-wai.
Now that's... yeah, that was... Nora Jones is in that, right?
Yeah.
She plays the Grandmaster.
Oh, that's right. She's the Grandmaster.
I will see that movie.
Of laundry folding music. She's the Grandmaster of that. Okay, so, well, I'll leave most of my comments for that, but people can check that out on the site.
Did you like it?
I did, generally. I think my reaction was when I watched it, I was kind of like, well, I'm not sure. I was a little lukewarm about it. But then as I sort of thought about it a little bit more and had to write about it and maybe read some other things, I was like, you know what? I kind of like this.
I was confused by the trailer because they make it a point more than once in the trailer to say, like, based on the amazing true story.
Sure.
But then they show characters definitely defying gravity and doing things like near a train that probably didn't happen in real life.
Yeah, it's
so why keep driving the whole true story thing home? I don't
know either.
Everybody read Mark Ahn Knows Kung Fu.
Yeah, that'd be great.
On The Grandmaster at fthismovie.net.
Yeah, we'll see you in the comments. So I saw that. I also saw Your Next.
Yes.
I saw that with Adam Risky, which was a hilarious experience. part of it, we mentioned it in some of the comments. Patrick wrote a thing about Your Next, which everyone should read. Although, just read that. Don't read anything else about the movie. Just kind of go see it. I know there's been a lot of love on our site for that movie.
Yes.
I don't necessarily want to say something that nobody else has already, but just go watch it. It's a good time.
You liked it.
I did.
And you're not really a fan of the horror movies.
No, I have a very narrow window of horror movies that I can watch / put up with because I'm a coward, everyone. I'm a coward and I have an overactive imagination, and so it's not good for me. Patrick and Adam coaxed me down from my tree and said, like, look, it's going to be fine. And so I did, and it's okay. So if the endorsement of a horror movie coward is useful to you, then whatever. So it was a good time.
Good.
So I'll say that.
All right.
Which one? I want to talk about two more, if that's okay.
Yeah,
very shortly.
Yeah.
I saw Blue Jasmine, which I think is definitely worth mentioning. I know you guys talked about it on previous podcasts. It's good. Go watch it, everybody. It's good. Cate Blanchett's fantastic.
Super good, right?
Yeah. It's really, really good.
It was hard for me to watch.
I can totally understand that.
Yeah, I don't like uncomfortable situations or characters who make me nervous, and that whole movie was just uncomfortable.
You know what movie I thought about that I could sort of, just in afterwards, that I sort of thought to compare it to was, it's a Charlize Theron one, it's young adult.
Yeah.
I thought about that one, sure. too. Because they're both, like, really unlikable people. But right. what's weird is that I liked Blue Jasmine way more than I liked Young Adult.
I could see that.
Which, I was like, I don't know. Anyway, yeah. People should go check it out. It's really good. Last one that I'll mention is I finally caught up with Stoker.
Oh, from yeah.
earlier in the year. By one of our favorites, Park Chan-wook, who was really, really good. I really liked it.
It's good, right?
I felt like the buzz that I heard about it before was not, like, commensurate to what I thought about it. I really, really liked it.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, that Park didn't have, like, his, like, the weird things that he does, his directorial style of stuff wasn't whitewashed. Haha, pun intended.
Yeah, absolutely.
That it just wasn't all diluted.
He didn't get hard targeted, you mean?
Yeah. They're like, let's put a giant robot in your movie, because that makes perfect sense. And so it's out on demand, which is how I saw it.
Yeah.
So people should definitely catch up with it. It's worth it.
Yeah, it kind of slipped by a lot of people because it came out early in the year and the reviews were not great and it came and went. And I don't feel like it's getting talked about that much, but yeah I really liked
people
it.
People should catch up to it. It was it's pretty high up on my list of like the ones I really like this year. So I think I can hear it when people are saying, did you write up something about it?
Adam Risky did.
Okay. I think I can hear it when people make, I can totally understand people making the argument saying that it's a little too affected and it's a little strange, but, I think that's part of what Park Chan-wook does.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
So he people, for, really especially know. For Scary Movie Month, I'd say it's maybe a little bit of a weird movie to go check out for that, and it'll
I could see that.
Fit right in there.
Yeah, so I could see that.
Yeah, it's me.
Right on. All right, so you talked about basically four movies that you liked.
Yeah.
Let me knock out four that I didn't.
Woo! The yin and the yang, baby.
Three that I didn't really like and one that I thought was okay.
Sure.
The one I thought was okay was Trance, the Danny Boyle movie.
Yeah. I saw that too, yeah.
Caught up with it. There's a review of that, also by Adam Risky, at our site. It's a weird thing because while it was on, I was into it. I was like,
absolutely.
This is very watchable
mm-hmm.
and you know, it has a lot of energy and the music is cool and whatever. But then as soon as it's over, you're kind of left wondering what was that all for?
Yeah. I was a little confused.
It takes some turns and brings up some larger issues that it doesn't seem interested in. Addressing,
mm-hmm.
It can't decide if it wants to be sort of a serious sort of meditation on certain things, and I don't even want to say what, because to say what would be a spoiler, or if it just wants to be sort of a straight-ahead little crime movie.
Sure. Yeah.
And it, in the last act, it literally bounces back and forth between both, and sometimes I would be all for that, but...
Yeah.
I thought it was totally watchable. I didn't think it was a bad movie. I just think it's a mess.
There's a lot of, by the end, there's a whole bunch of layers that I don't know which layer I'm in.
Or right.
if I'm, which ones I'm supposed to see through, and which ones have been taken away, and which ones are still there.
The layers seem to be just for the sake of having layers.
Sure. Yeah. I didn't know what level the characters were speaking on.
Right.
I was like, who's talking to who?
Even the initial turn, I don't even mind, but it sort of negates itself with the last scene. Anyway, I also caught up finally with Olympus Has Fallen, because I missed it when it was out earlier this year. I got to see White House Down.
Which one was the one that you were looking forward to more?
White House Down.
Okay.
Yeah. I sort of deliberately missed Olympus Has Fallen when it was out, just because I was like, well, if I'm going to see one movie
about... You were putting all your ducats.
Yeah, but then okay. I did not like White House Down at all. So Olympus Has Fallen kind of starts out, and I thought, well, this is clearly the better of the two movies, because it sort of plays it straight. It doesn't have all the stupid humor of White House Down. Humor in air quotes. But then Olympus Has Fallen quickly goes downhill. Jared Butler, I'm still just not on board with as a movie star.
Yeah. I would be more on board with him if he just was in, not even like perform well, but like was just in more better movies.
Yes.
He just seems to be in a whole, it's like that string of, I forget when this happened exactly, but when Samuel L. Jackson just had a whole, just a row of just horrible movies.
I think that's still going on.
Probably.
And that's why when he's in something like Django Unchained, we're all like, holy shit, wow, Samuel Jackson can act. Look at that.
But see, that's what saves him. And then Gerard Butler never has his own Django Unchained.
Right.
Is it a good thing?
No.
I don't know.
I feel like I still do this and others do too. I think point to Rock and Rolla, the Guy Ritchie movie, as being Gerard Butler's good performance. But again, that's because he's just part of a movie that's much better.
Right.
And he's fine in that movie, so he needs to do more of those and less Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah, he needs to fire his agent.
He stabs a lot of people in the head in Olympus Has Fallen.
He does.
Which was impressive, especially in one scene. I don't think this is a spoiler. He asks a guy who was ostensibly his friend for information to help him out. The guy does it, and then he stabs him in the head anyway.
Oh. Look, it's all up for grabs, guys.
I guess.
The president is in danger.
I guess.
It's all up for grabs.
On Netflix Instant, I watched The Brass Teapot.
I have not heard of this.
With Michael Arangano and Juno Temple, an actress who continues to get work, and I cannot understand why. She's fine, but she's become like this indie darling, and she's in everything, and she's having the Parker Posey run from like the 90s. She's good in Killer Joe, but everything else I've seen her in, I just, whatever. They play a couple who are very broke, and they get this teapot, and every time they hurt themselves, it produces money.
What?
And then they find out they can also hurt each other and get more money. And wacky things happen from there. It's sort of a comedy. It's very sort of self-consciously quirky.
Sure.
And it's interesting because filmmakers have gotten so good at copying a certain kind of indie style and feel.
Yeah.
That if I saw a movie like this in the 90s, when that first wave was sort of rolling out, I probably really would have liked it because I would have responded to all those things.
Sure.
But now I see through it as being just a fake version of that thing, you know? So it's well made, but it doesn't, again, it has this wacky concept at its center and then doesn't know what to say about that.
Sure. It sounds like a dark, kind of like a fairy tale, sort of.
Yeah, kind of. It doesn't know where to go with, again, the whole metaphor. Kind of like trance. And then the last thing I'll talk about is a horror movie. I went to see a midnight show of it last week, only to then find out that it's on demand, and possibly even at Redbox.
Boo!
Called Saturday Morning Mystery.
Okay.
And I went, actually, because the director, Spencer Parsons, is his name, was also doing a Q&A, which sounds more appealing ahead of time, not when it's 2 in the morning and you realize, okay, now it's time to start the Q&A. an interesting idea, again, for a horror movie. It essentially plays Scooby-Doo as though it's a horror movie. It's this group of four people and a dog who investigate haunted houses and sort of debunk them, and then they go to one house that actually turns out to have monsters and killers in it. It doesn't totally work as a movie, and hearing him talk afterwards, you know, he said they shot it for basically $20,000 in 10 days. A lot of it is improvised, and you hear those things and you say, well, knowing that, I have a greater appreciation for the movie, but should you need to know that in order to like a movie?
Because it sounds like it's cheating. Like it should just be good, just that it's good.
Right, and it's not quite. It's not the worst, but if you're a big horror fan and you're looking for something a little bit different, again, I think it's a neat idea. The best part of that was that I was sitting right behind Joe Swanberg and didn't get up the courage to talk to him, but it was cool to...
I don't think you need any courage to talk to him. Did you have enough courage to flick him behind the ear?
No.
That would have been great.
I did not.
You could blame it on the guy next to you.
Yeah, there was...
I don't know. I don't know what happened. This guy.
He doesn't like your movies.
Right.
Anyway, so wow, that's 8 movies we just burned through pretty quickly.
Whatever.
You're welcome, everyone.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Riddick.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do this.
Or Riddick.
Marcon, you are the ideal person to speak with about Riddick because you are the only other person I know who is a fan.
And you know a lot of people.
Of, not that many, of The Chronicles of Riddick. everybody likes Pitch Black, as well they should. It's a pretty cool movie.
Sure.
But a year or two ago, I think we did a thing on the website about what's a movie that you like that you probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
And your answer was Chronicles of Riddick, and I read it, and I was like, that is a perfect answer, and B, I was so excited to find somebody else who likes that movie, I do too. And, yeah. So we are fans as of the franchise.
Yes, we are.
What were your thoughts on Riddick?
Well, it's hard because you walk into this, and I think maybe you walked into this way as well, having like a sort of an irrational affection for kind of what these things are.
Definitely.
And what these things, what I mean by that, of course, is the previous two movies and this one. And I think, you know, I have irrational affections for, like, Jason Statham movies as well. Yeah. I have an irrational affection. And so part of it was, like, you just can't explain it to other people, like, why you like it. It's like, look, I just like it. Although, we'll attempt to explain. I just watched it this morning. I liked it, but I can definitely see how it's maybe other people wouldn't. Like, I could see how people who just generally like the Riddick movies would enjoy it as well. I don't know how big of a audience outside of it that this movie is going to find. But generally, I'll say that I generally liked it.
Yeah.
It was a good time. I had fun.
I had the same reaction. And as you said, I think I was talking to somebody about it, maybe Doug. And I said, I liked it a lot. I don't think I would recommend it to anyone for the same reason that you just said, because you sort of have to be a fan, not just of the franchise, but one of the things that I like about it is that it really is a movie that's just for dorks.
Yes.
Like it goes all in on like sci-fi fantasy. Like this is only for people who are into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And if you're not, I think you're going to be less cold by it. You're going to find it silly. You're going to be bored, I would say, by the first act.
Sure.
And sort of the theatricality, not the theatricality, it doubles down on certain things. This is not a spoiler, but at one point, Riddick is seen lit with the moon behind him walking up a cliff naked.
Yep.
And it's the silliest thing I may see in a movie this year.
Sure is.
But the thing that's great about Riddick is that it means it.
Yeah.
It takes it totally seriously.
This is what he would do.
Yeah. And it looks like sort of a Frank Frazetta painting, or like it reminded me sort of the John Candy segment from Heavy Metal where the nerd turns into the big bald dude.
Oh, that was his. Yeah.
Yeah. It has that kind of a vibe.
I'm going to confess something. I had no idea that John Candy had anything to do with that.
He voiced that character. I wish I could remember the name. It's like a three-word, it's like Tor or something. I can't remember the name of that character, but it had that kind of a vibe to it.
Oh, my gosh. So many things in my childhood make sense now.
That is John Candy. Want the movie to succeed for a couple of reasons. One, I want them to make another one because I enjoy these movies.
Yes.
And two, I'm fascinated by the way that this movie was made. Like, Vin Diesel and David Tui insist on making more Riddick movies, even though there's not really an audience for them.
Right.
And I like that, maybe because I'm the audience for it.
Sure, yeah.
But, you know, Vin Diesel agreed to appear in Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Spoilers, if you haven't seen that movie, he makes a cameo at the end.
Yes.
His payment for that was that Universal gave him the rights to Riddick, the character.
Hey!
So, he decided, he wants to keep making these. So, they made this movie for about, I think, like $38
million. So, it's like a medium. It's like a small to medium movie.
Yeah, for a movie set entirely in space, populated by a lot of aliens and ships and stuff, it's pretty low budget, And a lot of times it looks it.
Sure.
So they basically self-financed this $38 million movie, and Vin Diesel put up a lot of the money himself. And so I want gambles like this to pay off for the people that are willing to take them, because it's so contrary to most of what we get now, where everything is focused, grouped, and test marketed and marketed like crazy. And so I like that this definitely comes from this is Vin Diesel's passion project. Yes. He loves this character and wants to keep playing him. And I think that should be supported. So I want the movie to, it's not going to be a huge hit. There's absolutely no way, but I want it to make enough money that he could justify making more of them.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. I know this is like a non-spoiler part, and so I don't know if this is too far off, but I think it's super interesting, the story that came out that he had to remortgage his house or something. I'm not going to get that right, but he put a lot of his own personal stake in terms of his own finances into making the movie, which I was like, oh, okay, well, that's a lot he has writing on it. And I wonder if sometimes, and this is more about Vin Diesel's career as to the movie, so we can veer back, but I just thought, like, oh, maybe, I wonder why, part of the reason why it's such a passion project for him is that there's not, I mean, outside of all the Fast and Furious stuff, like, there's not a lot of roles for Vin Diesel. Sure. You know, it's Riddick and it's Dominic Toretto.
Right.
And like, he's not in anything else. And so that's part of his own, like, that's why maybe he's so invested. Cause like, this is the only thing it's him generating his own work. And so I don't know.
I think at this point he could be in other stuff. I mean, he's not going to show a ton of range maybe, although I still haven't seen Find Me Guilty, which I know is more of a dramatic role.
Yeah.
You know, he did some stuff early on that I thought he was good in. I liked him in Boiler Room, and he's fine in Private Ryan. Yep. I think the Fast and Furious movies are so popular that I think he could make other movies.
Sure.
I just think he really wants to keep playing Riddick. Like, sure. I think he does Fast and Furious movies to make enough money to support his Riddick habit. Riddick, yeah, so he can make more Riddick movies.
Because he's the Riddick is the cottage industry.
Exactly.
I gotcha.
I have done kind of this weird 180 in the last couple weeks on Vin Diesel, because Vin Diesel is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And always will be. But I'm to the point now where I find it very charming how sincere he is about all of his ridiculousness.
Sure.
If you go on, like, his Facebook page, it's all just pictures of him with, like, airbrushed messages that are just, like, believe in yourself. And he's so sincere and, like, this super positive guy. And I'm fascinated by that to the point where when his production company name, which of course, is called One Race. of course that would be your name, your production company name, Vin Diesel. It has a double meaning. Showed up at the beginning of Riddick, I was kind of already giggling, you know, to your point, because I came in with this unnatural affection for Riddick. I was excited to see it, so I kind of giggled just at the production company name. But
you really like Vin Diesel. Charming. He's very positive.
He is, yeah. And also, that was the other thing I wanted to say, is that, and what people don't necessarily know, because he makes these Fast and Furious movies,
sure.
And he's this gearhead, and he only drinks Corona and whatever, and there's a very specific audience for the Fast and Furious movies
yes.
that isn't served by a lot of other movies. And right. so Vin Diesel is this icon to an audience of people who don't necessarily have these other icons. But what I think those people don't understand is that Vin Diesel is, like, a dork, not just for his positivity, but like he's like he was way into Dungeons and Dragons and
right.
like loves fantasy.
Right.
And so these movies sort of come by that very honestly. Like I said at the beginning, that this is a movie that really only appeals to sort of sci-fi fantasy geeks and comes by it really honestly. David Tui is a huge sci-fi guy.
Yeah.
And Vin Diesel is a huge fantasy guy, and so that this is the movie that you come up with.
Right.
These are all reasons why I want it to succeed. Anyway, yeah. We should talk about the movie itself.
We should. Where should we
Gosh, I don't know. This, I don't think, is a spoiler. The first act of this movie is ballsy, again. For a movie that is going to struggle to succeed as it is, I found it fascinating that they made the choice to open with 25 to 30 minutes of basically Vin Diesel alone on a planet. just trying to survive.
It's really small in scale.
Yeah.
It's just not even another person around.
He has called it the Jeremiah Johnson section, which is appropriate. I think I saw somebody else refer to it as like the Wall-E section. You know, it's just one guy alone on a planet. Did that stuff work for you?
I think it did, because I was curious about where this third movie was going to go in relation to the other two movies. Pitch Black has its also smaller in scale.
Yeah.
Chronicles of Riddick, much larger in scale, more action-y.
Yeah.
So where was this one going to go? And so I appreciated that it just started with him. But also it started with him in a way that's a little bit... It's a different introduction than in the other movies, obviously, because there's a history with this character. But then, also, I liked it, because it was not this... It's how Riddick sees himself a little bit, and how he figures things out on his own, as opposed to how the other characters sort of see him.
Right.
Which is what I think the other two movies sort of do.
Yeah, that there's basically been two movies of other characters saying this guy's a badass, this guy, you can't kill him.
He's
this
a murderer,
guy,
right. He's awful, he's crazy.
And so here, at least, you sort of get a sense of here's how he's able to be that person, because he is smart, because he will figure out a way to survive, you know. I was impressed by that whole section, because, again, I thought it was ballsy that they were sort of... going to do that again with a movie that is already going to alienate so much of the audience, and now they might even alienate some more. But again, it's sort of a hardcore sci-fi, or not that the movie's like hard science fiction, but that they committed to that. And I liked this idea of Riddick exploring this planet, and that the whole first act is just setting up. Here's all the ways the planet can kill you.
Yeah,
and I will say, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, one of my disappointments with the movie is that that idea doesn't really come back up again.
Sure.
It does in only sort of one respect, and that's when the movie turns into sort of just a remake of Pitch Black.
Yeah, I agree. There is a little bit of there's a shift into the second act of it, when... and this is not a spoiler, because it's all in all the trailers and stuff. When, like, the team of people... Because wherever... I always laugh at, like, the universe that Riddick lives in, because it's mostly just him, and there's a couple of just, like, normal people, right, who just, like, go about their day and, like, get milk and whatever. And then it's all mercenaries. There's only mercenaries.
His entire
everywhere.
Life is just...
Yeah.
And they're always able to find him.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's very, very strange. They're constantly looking for him all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a bizarre universe. Anyway, the second act kind of veers into where there's lots of mercenaries, and they show up, and that's Riddick. And so it's a showdown between these whatever. And then it just turns into a different... It just kind of shifts into a different movie, because then it's much more focused. It kind of goes away from Riddick, actually.
He actually almost totally disappears for the whole second act, and... I don't know if this is my theory, and if it isn't, I apologize. Maybe I read this somewhere, and I'm reinterpreting it as my own. That he was off, like, shooting a Fast and Furious movie. And that's... You really barely even see him for that whole middle act, which is good and bad. I mean, it's bad in the sense that the movie's called Riddick, and you want to stay with that character.
Sure.
Though you did get so much time with him up front that I actually didn't mind the interplay between all the bounty hunters. I thought was fine. Like, I thought, oh, we're watching this movie now, and I'm still on board with this movie.
Yeah.
But it is very segmented the way it's just Riddick, then it's just the bounty hunters, and then the third act is Riddick plus bounty hunters.
Right.
Another disappointment for me, and again, I liked the movie, so I'm fine with the movie that it is, but I will say that as a fan of Chronicles of Riddick, where that movie leaves things is way more interesting to me than...
Right.
The way that it's dealt with is very sort of tossed away. It's they make excuses, basically, for here's why we're going back and doing a small story that remakes Pitch Black.
Sure.
And that's a budgetary issue more than anything. But I wanted to see the movie where Riddick was king.
Yes, a little bit.
Yeah.
I also want to see the movie where
And I know they're doing this partially because they just want to keep on making more Riddick movies.
Yeah.
I want to see the movie where he finds his home planet.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that we need to get to.
Right.
Thing. I think there's only... And it's this reoccurring issue when you have a character that... That people are sort of familiar with all the time, or it's, his stuff has been out there for a while, then you need to not... You kind of need to keep doing things that are different, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to this point, even if no one is, for instance, like, if you're not a comic book fan, you still, like, know Wolverine a little bit, and so you have to, like, explore different parts of his backstory, or you just got to, like, instead of just hinting at things in the future, you got to push him into that thing that you've been hinting at.
Right.
So I kind of, I guess I'm at the point where I would like to, I'm not saying I didn't like this movie, but I kind of wish that the next movie that I saw was where Riddick is king, which would be great, or Riddick is, like, finds his home planet. Like,
yeah.
That should, that would have been great if that was the next one.
In terms of the character, he's definitely just kind of treading water in this movie.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Repeating a lot of things that we've already seen. And even in terms of where it fits in within the franchise, it's a little bit of a placeholder.
Right.
It's, here's another Riddick movie, because this is the one we could afford to make.
Right.
It's
like, hey, it's Riddick doing all of his... And it's great, because I like it, because I'm a fan of Riddick, of him doing all of his Riddick things, right? He's in the dark, he's got his knives, he's saying badass one-liners. And I like all those things, and it's fine, and I love those things. But also, at the same time, it like, when he's not running away from mercs, what's he doing?
Yeah.
Like, he's constantly escaping, which is fantastic. Where does he kind of go when he escapes? It's like maybe all he wants to do in his free time that we never get to see because it's never in the movies is just, he just wants to read quietly. He plays the harp. He likes knitting.
Well, he does domesticate a pet in this movie.
Yes, maybe he's got an animal husbandry business on the side. Why don't we ever get to see, you know? But I feel like it's the point where, like, you know, obviously there's large plot holes that, or sorry, there's large pitfalls and dangers when you're like, oh, I want to know the backstory of this character.
Right, but right.
I feel like we've already spent two movies worth of whatever on this guy. Like, it's okay to show some more stuff about him. I don't know, that's it.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Were the budgetary limitations ever a problem for you? The movie has some questionable special effects.
Sure. I don't think for the special effects necessarily the budgetary stuff really bothered me. I really think actually the, and I'm thinking back to Pitch Black, right? But I thought the creatures, there's a bunch of creatures, spoilers everybody, there's creatures, there's creatures, were okay, and like the pet that he domesticates is okay. So I don't think it necessarily, but I think the only way that it sort of, I was aware of it while watching the movie was that, that the scale of the story was so small.
Right.
And I was like, that's kind of really where it showed up. I don't know. How did it work for you?
It didn't bother me. Although again, it is interesting because I do think this movie is only going to appeal to a very specific genre audience because again, mainstream audiences are used to seeing such sophisticated special effects that now, to see the sort of dog thing that Riddick domesticates, it looks and feels a lot like the CGI Scooby-Doo from that movie. And we've come a long way since then, you know?
Sure.
And so to go back, I think is going to be jarring for a lot of people. Again, I liked a lot of that stuff, and that part of that is me just rationalizing, like, well, they're only able to do this because this is a labor of love and this is the money that they have, so I'm glad they did it at all.
Right.
And part of it is, honestly, and Adam Risky had commented that this was one of the things he liked, too, that every once in a while the effects have this sort of handmade look to them. The first time they get on those motorcycles flying. Yeah. It again, it doesn't look great compared to Transformers or
else,
Man of Steel,
Yeah.
Everything else that we have out now. To me, it looked like, it reminded me of like Flash Gordon. The 81 Flash Gordon. And I liked that again, because this movie is very much in the tradition of those movies. Mm-hmm. Just very straightforward genre B movie.
Yeah.
And while it is treading water a little bit within the franchise, it doesn't feel like anything else that's out right now.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, you know, most of the major studio releases now are genre movies.
They're
comic book movies or action movies or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And yet, here's a genre movie that's like, you want to see a genre movie? Here yeah. you go. So it looks and feels, I think, different from everything else, and that's one of the things I liked about it.
I think one of the excuses, I don't know, maybe alibis that I built into my head for some of the clunkiness is yeah. just that since a lot of this movie is, as we've mentioned, is channeling the first movie,
yeah.
I just feel like it's all, like, of a piece, you know?
Sure.
Like, it's okay that this is, like, early 2000s effects, because, right. like, it's basically the right. same world that,
right.
that we're living in. And so, like, if it looks a little junky or a little awkward or not as sophisticated, I'm like, well, that's fine. That's just the world that this movie lives in anyway.
Yeah, this movie is like the Rocky Balboa of Riddick movies, because the first movie is Rocky. It's this scrappy little underdog that comes out of nowhere featuring a cast of people maybe you recognize, but not any really, big names. Sure. And it's this cool little sci-fi B-movie that maybe you were lucky to see in theaters, but mostly caught on video. And then the second one comes along, and that's like the Rocky III. That's where it's like,
yeah.
we've grown too big for our bridges, where our reach has exceeded our grasp. It's all just flashy and expensive and
yeah.
trying to do too much. And now we have to go back to, and now we're back to being the scrappy underdog,
sure.
sort of the Rocky Balboa, if you will.
I can't make a comparison. What I thought more was, not that this is actually what it is, yep. but I feel like it follows this blueprint, was I thought of Aliens.
Okay.
Because where Alien is like the science fiction movie that's more of a horror movie.
Right.
That it's got, you know, the monster and you're trying to escape the monster. Pitch Black. Again, the right. monsters you're trying to
right.
escape. A horror movie. And then the second movie, Aliens, is the big actioner, and there's, like,
right.
you know, lots of set pieces, people running around, machine gun fire, whatever, all that stuff. And then Chronicles of Riddick, sort of that pattern as well. I don't know where this third one goes. And my metaphor.
I mean, it certainly yeah, owes.
That sound is my metaphor crashing to the ground like porcelain.
It certainly owes, I think, a little bit to Aliens again.
Sure.
If only just because of the interplay between all the mercenaries, certainly recalls.
Yeah.
The interplay between the Marines and Aliens. What'd you think of the performances in the movie? Again, besides Vin Diesel, who continues sure. to just be Vin Diesel in everything.
Right, it's fine. Yeah. Although I will say with Vin Diesel's performance, it's hard now to, and everybody, I think every actor does this, but I can't tell where Vin Diesel ends and Dominic Toretto begins.
Yeah.
And would just, in the pie chart inside of his head, like, how much Vin Diesel is Vin Diesel, and how much of it is Dominic Toretto, and how much of it is Riddick? Like,
I think it's all Riddick. Again, this speaks to, like, I know that he loves playing Riddick so much that, again, he plays Dominic Toretto half-heartedly. Like, his heart's only half, because he's like, oh, I'm just collecting a paycheck until the next time I can put those sunglasses on. And be Riddick. Like, the whole time he's playing Toretto, he's just thinking about the next time he can be Riddick.
The next, because I was just thinking back to the movies when, because he made Pitch Black before the Fast and Furious ones, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So at that point, no one is making that comparison, really, right?
Right?
No one's comparing Fast and Furious to Pitch Black. But then now, only looking back on it now, I'm like, wait a second, what's informing what's necessary?
I would be 100% fine if Vin Diesel literally just alternated Fast and Furious and Riddick movies
That's
for
fine.
The rest of his career.
Okay.
I would go see every single one.
Yeah, probably.
I would.
I'll probably
not
end up opening. Yeah, for F This Movie, the video thing that you and Doug do, 100 will be in front of the shelves with all right. the Riddick movies. Just, Riddick 19.
Yes.
Whatever.
Am fine with that. As long as it's not, to your point, just him landing on another planet and bounty hunters
right.
chasing again. Like, they need
yeah.
to. It's
that's
fine
TV,
if they wanted
that's a TV
to.
TV series.
Exactly. Yeah. And if they keep doing this, that's what it's going to feel like.
Sure.
I'm fine with movies of this scale. And if this is the way they need to do it in order to keep making them, I say go for it.
Yeah.
But find different stories
yeah.
to tell
yes.
on this scale.
We're talking about other performances.
Yeah.
It's Katie Sackhoff, is that?
Katie Sackhoff.
Katie
yeah.
Sackhoff.
Yeah.
I don't watch a lot of Battlestar Galactica, but I like that they cast her
yeah,
as
right.
the badass girl. I definitely know my friends who are Battlestar Galactica fans will be overjoyed to see her in that movie.
Sure.
I liked, who's the black guy? I forget his name. What's his name? The actor? I totally forget.
I don't know.
I blanked out. But he's also a guy who is,
was also in late 90s, early 2000s kind of movies.
Oh, Bokeem Woodbine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, where you been? Yeah. I've missed you. Yeah. The last movie I saw you in was that Mark Wahlberg movie where he plays a hitman. Oh, what is it?
Oh, The Big Hit.
Yeah, that's the last thing I remember him from. Anyway.
Yeah, he's been in stuff since.
Which is like forever ago.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything. So I was like, hey, good for you. Good to see you. So the other performances were fine. I don't think there was anything super noteworthy aside from Katie Sackhoff, because she's like the one girl, and so they put her in like girl vulnerable situations a little bit.
Yeah, there's. I mean, she has one scene that obviously people are going to talk about, and I don't know what it's doing in the movie except to be that moment.
Creepy.
Yeah, like guess what we have in this movie? Dave Bautista. Did he make a big impression on you?
Which one was he?
He's the big wrestler. He's a wrestler.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that he was a wrestler.
Yeah.
He
was a WWE wrestler.
I like him okay.
He's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
I feel like he's okay. I just feel like whenever I see him and stuff, because I think he was in Man with the Iron Fist.
He was.
Right?
Yes.
It's cool just because he's this big guy, but I would rather him not talk.
Yeah, no, he's not great. He's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
And
is he going to talk?
He's playing Drax the Destroyer, which was going to be Jason Momoa, which would have been
so much
the
better.
Best. And I was heartbroken when they went with Dave. But I think Jason Momoa like maybe wanted too much money here, so it went to Dave Bautista.
And wanted to make a Riddick movie.
No, God, he should.
I'm sorry, everybody.
Please get Jason Momoa in the next Riddick movie. OMG,
have him be Riddick's little brother.
You can even have him be a mercenary. I don't
Riddick
care.
Jr.
You could do mercenary again. I actually thought the guy that played Johns was really good.
Who's that actor?
I don't know.
I don't think I've ever seen him before.
I don't feel like I have either, and I looked at his IMDb page and nothing jumped out at me.
And it confirmed that you didn't.
Yeah, like, well, he's been in stuff, but nothing I've seen.
Sure.
I thought he was good.
I thought he was fine.
He had a different energy, I felt, than so many of the other people who were playing tough guy, or like Jordy Moya is going way over the top as sort of the villain of the movie. But he had a few line deliveries that were really funny. Everybody's sort of one note, even Katie Sackhoff, of whom I'm a fan, was very much just doing the tough one-liner delivery.
She's being Starbuck.
Yeah, and John's, I thought, went a different way. And I thought it was interesting, too, that they attempted to tie that back to Pitch Black.
Yeah.
And with that, I guess we should get into spoilers. Yeah. I don't know if that's a spoiler or not, but if you haven't seen Riddick and you're a fan of the franchise, or if you're just a fan of fantasy and science fiction, you used to play D&D, or you've seen heavy metal a bunch of times.
That you knew that John Candy did the voiceover.
I totally think it's worth seeing.
I just lost my dork card.
And I think the movie should be supported, so we get genre movies made by people who are passionate about them and not corporations.
Absolutely.
All right, spoilers for Riddick.
Okay, let's start with the John stuff.
Yeah.
I like that they went back, they made a connection to, like, as if it wasn't obvious enough already, right? That they're making a connection back to the first one. So I was okay with them, like, with the Johns being the father, although I thought it was different that it's the father.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, I thought it was, like, brother.
Right.
But when they said father, I was like, is that guy old enough?
Right.
I'm not sure. That guy looks about 10 years older than Riddick.
I
don't know, whatever. But I don't know, when was the last time you saw Pitch Black? Because I just haven't seen it very recently.
Honestly, I watched it probably like a month ago.
Okay, cool. Okay. So I thought it was that fact was interesting, so that the dad wants to come back and he wants to figure out, like, hey, what happened to my kid or whatever, and of course Riddick is the one holding the piece of truth that John's, the son, is just kind of a dick.
Right.
And then it just kind of doesn't, and like that's, it kind of just sits right there.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it leads to the ending, which is, well, we're in spoilers. Papa John's, oh God, that just happened. Oh, it sucks that John's the dad, lets Riddick go at the end. And that's the reason. Cause thank you. But like, for what? It's like, thank you for telling me that my kid's a dick.
Right.
have a nice life. I don't know if that's so, that one, I don't know if it worked for me.
Well, I think technically he was trying to be a man of his word.
Sure.
And he did find out that Riddick didn't kill his kid. I will say that while I like the fact that they did try to tie it back to Pitch Black, so there's a little connection to Chronicles of Riddick with the flashback with Carl Urban, and then there's a connection to Pitch Black with the John stuff, it was a little bit arbitrary, you know? Like, the connection seemed to be for the sake of making a connection to Pitch Black, so it didn't, I don't think, make it a better movie.
Yeah.
I was very pleased that it didn't end with, like, Katie Sackhoff also on the shuttle with Riddick.
Yeah.
Which would have made me throw up. Right, exactly.
Because that's not what he's about, man.
Right.
He's got the shine.
Right. And she had made it very clear that she wasn't interested. And so it would have just been a cheap Hollywood.
Although there is, like, that weird, like, play that they have between each other of this weird sexual tension. Which I don't know how much of it is they're playing off of audience expectation of, like, well, she's the one girl.
Right.
And that's Riddick, who's awesome at everything, by the way, everyone. So clearly they should hook up. And then he makes one of my favorite lines in the movie, which is when he says, he makes the comment about Katie Sackhoff's character of, like, I'm gonna be balls deep and dull, sweet-like, which I thought was hilarious.
That he's gonna be sweet-like?
Yeah, he's gonna be sweet-like. Yeah. And so it's toward the end, like, there's this play of, like, and, like, it feels like she's attracted to him, but I'm like, why, though?
Right.
That's not necessary.
Yeah, it's really not. Strange. Like, she could respect him.
Right.
For essentially keeping his word or whatever,
So anyway, that's
suggest that she's attracted,
but that's weird. But so it's great that she's not with her mother, which is great.
I was kind of waiting for that beat.
I was like, no, don't do it.
I would have been unhappy.
I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
We've done a couple of other podcasts, and we just had the summer wrap up.
Yeah.
Podcast, and so I was thinking about science fiction movies that came out this summer.
Okay.
And just how do you feel like this one sort of places amongst all of them? And then just also maybe just, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about just the science fiction from this summer in general.
Oh, all right, cool.
A little bit.
Well, I'm the worst because I still haven't seen Elysium. So, and that's one of the kind of the major science fiction movies to come out. So I can't compare this. What else would we be comparing it to?
There was Oblivion.
Okay.
There was,
I meant to say this on the summer podcast.
Oh, well, you can see it now.
You and I did a show on Oblivion in April.
Yep.
And then the summer season comes along, and movie after movie, I'm kind of disappointed. And it was around late July or August when I realized, I think I was way too hard on Oblivion. Because looking back now, I'm like, I think I liked Oblivion more than I've liked a lot of these movies.
Sure.
But maybe not. I don't know. I'm going to get ripped to shreds for this.
Here we go. This is what I always appreciated about you. You're a man of courage.
That I'll go out on.
I'm going to say something really
Liked Riddick and had a better time with Riddick than I did with Pacific Rim.
Okay.
And I know Pacific Rim was supposed to be the second coming of the fanboy cinema.
Right, the birthing.
The new Star Wars, if you are Devin Faraci. Right. Yeah. I liked Riddick better.
Okay.
I think I need to see Oblivion again because I don't know how to compare it.
Sure.
I would say I liked Riddick better only because Riddick is very much its own thing.
Yeah.
And not just a pastiche of all this other stuff, which is what I accused Oblivion of being, but it's not like Riddick is super original.
Right.
It's Wall-E, and then it's Aliens, like, and then it's Pitch Black.
A little Road Warrior. Right, little Arnold Schwarzenegger vibe in there a little bit.
So when I say it's its own thing, it's only because it has developed a voice by virtue of being the third movie in a series.
Sure.
But it's not really its own thing. How about you?
I saw Elysium. I think the science, I feel like those four are the major four science fiction ones, right?
Okay.
I don't want to get Man of Steel in there.
No.
Because I feel like it's a
Or Star Trek in the Darkness.
Right. No.
If you dare call that science fiction.
That's a mess.
Yeah.
What's funny is that one of my friends is just staying over at my house, actually. We were talking about some of these things, so it's interesting. So those four, out of those four movies, I feel like the science fiction movies that we did that came out this summer were kind of like on the list of the movies that I've seen this year so far are always like kind of like in the middle.
Okay.
They're never like the worst,
I think out of all of those four, I liked Oblivion the least. But even that is, like, not at the bottom. I never, like, hated Oblivion.
Yeah, right.
And Oblivion's like, eh, it's okay.
Our whole podcast was just kind of an hour-long shrug.
Right. Like, yeah. It was just us eating. It's like, hey, what's for lunch? Oatmeal? Okay, well. Oatmeal, I guess.
Yeah.
So you know, that's kind of what it is. But I liked Pacific Rim more than you did, but yeah. I also would not put it, like, in the top 10 movies for this year, I don't think, for myself. But I liked it okay, and I had fun with it. So I just kind of think it's interesting that the sci-fi movies haven't been the best.
Yeah.
Haven't been the worst, either. I kind of feel the same way about Elysium, just personally. Just that it was okay, and it's fine. Actually, this was what I was talking about with my house guest, because he had just seen Elysium, and he's like, oh, did you see that? And so we talked about it a little bit, and I was like, yeah, it's all right. And he was like, yeah, you know what? I feel the same way, that it's just okay. So I was like, oh, well, I wonder where this one kind of ranks. But I appreciate, again, that it's this sort of... it's just different. And I like that there was four, like, science fiction movies this summer that was viable and that I could, that was like, you know what? I want to go see that in the theater. I want to go do that.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it. I wanted to ask you about, I feel like there's more and more that Vin Diesel has in common with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Diesel gets older. What do you think about that comparison?
Gosh, I don't know. In what way? Because I feel like Vin Diesel is almost more like a Steven Seagal type at this point. Just in that he has found his niche and he's sticking with that, whereas Schwarzenegger was much more about becoming a breakout star. And he was the biggest star in the country for a couple years and was making the biggest, most expensive movies. You know, Schwarzenegger almost had more in common with, like, a Tom Cruise at one point.
I think the comparison that I see is just the physicality of the actors.
Okay.
Right? Because Vin Diesel's sort of a bigger guy.
Yeah.
Clearly a guy who, like, tries to be strong or whatever. But then, like, some of the earlier Schwarzenegger stuff is, like, you know, the Conan the Barbarian. All that other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, like, dorky fantasy sci-fi milieu of stuff. And I'm not saying that Diesel is like Schwarzenegger, or even, I think even at the height of Vin Diesel's popularity. Wait, I should not talk about as if that's in the past. I feel like this is pretty close to the height of his popularity.
He might be at the height,
right. That there was, like, I don't think they're equivalent at all in terms of their popularity, but I do feel like Vin Diesel's career has sort of, like, it's like a career that's had one eye on Schwarzenegger's and been like, oh, like, that's a way to do things, right? That there's such a clear, with Schwarzenegger, was very aware of his own, like, weaknesses and sort of, like, here's the things that he can do and can't do.
Right.
And I feel like Vin Diesel does the same thing. He's very aware of, like, okay, look, I'm not the... You know, I'm not this kind of actor. I'm more like this kind of actor. This is the kind of stuff that I should be doing. So
it's hard to say. I think a couple years ago, I think that was definitely true in terms of when Vin Diesel was trying to be, I think, more of sort of a mainstream star. In that, you know, he saw Schwarzenegger branch out and do comedy, so he makes The Pacifier, which is a quote unquote comedy that's playing off of his own image as a tough guy. And then Vin Diesel's career kind of shit the bed for a couple of years. And so now we're watching sort of a comeback. And it's hard to say where it's going to go. Maybe he goes back to that. And maybe he does do the Schwarzenegger thing, which is like he tries to do some different kinds of things that are still within his range. I don't know. Or do we just see him continue to do just the Vin Diesel projects? You know? I don't know.
I could see it where I wonder if when we get to Riddick 22,
or which I will go see.
It's shaping up. Remember earlier in the summer, you guys mentioned the only next direction that the Fast and Furious franchise can go to is space.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm saying Riddick's already there.
What if a team of bounty hunters is hired to take down Riddick, but that team of bounty hunters is Toretto and Brian O'Connor and Ludacris and Tyrese. So now you have Vin Diesel playing two parts in the same movie. But of course, they hear Riddick's story and they're like, well, listen, man, we're not going to take you down. Let's join forces.
Right.
And now you have Dominic Toretto working side by side with Richard B. Riddick. Dick Riddick, by the way, is his name.
Diddick.
Dick Riddick.
Oh, my God.
Wah, wah.
That's a movie that is highly hilarious right now, but in my head was, like, kind of great.
Yeah.
I would watch that.
Oh, my God. I want to start writing it. Like, I just thought of it right now. I want to start writing it as soon as we're done.
And then we'll have a place for Jason Momoa in it.
Oh, my God.
And then we'll totally watch this.
He needs to be in one of these two franchises.
Yeah, it's just right in his
wheelhouse. Did you see Bullet to the Head?
No, I didn't.
It's not very good, but he's so great in it. It's worth seeing it.
Because he's Jason Momoa.
Just for him. But he was not good in Conan.
Sure.
Which was not a good movie.
That would have made me sad.
I had said this early in the podcast, and I was going to just come back to it real quick, that I liked how the first half hour of the movie sets up how dangerous this planet is, and here's all these ways the planet will kill you.
Oh, right.
But then ultimately, at the end, it just comes down to
guns.
These aliens, like, and they'll kill you, or, right, the other mercenaries will kill each other. Yeah. And I felt like the movie would have been stronger if it had been sort of more circular in that way, that the first act sets up the last act in a real way, that the script would have been tighter.
That's a more of a payoff.
Yeah.
I wasn't also totally sure or totally clear on how the monsters worked necessarily.
I was not either.
Because they were introduced in the beginning where it's like so there's this monster with like a weird scorpion tail situation that curves around and up, but then just attacks you when it just jumps out of the water and bites you.
Right.
Which is fine. I understand that. And then in the opening of the movie, this is the first act stuff where Riddick is exploring the everything. He gets attacked by one of those and he cuts off the head of the monster, but then it comes back to life because it regrows its own head, which I thought was, well, that's kind of cool. That's not something you normally see. And then he escapes and he runs away. And so I was, again, kind of, this is to your point, that later on when all these monsters, like the monsters are, you know, ambushing, or they're surrounding the thing, the building where all the characters are, that I was like, oh, well, that's going to play out, right? But it just seems like it doesn't, they just end up dispatching them and shot to the head, they're done. And right. I'm like, no, but wait, you did this really cool thing from before. Maybe I just saw it totally wrong and I didn't get it.
And what exactly was he doing with, he was like injecting himself with the venom.
Oh, I think that's because he figured out that those animals were poisonous.
Uh-huh.
And so he injected himself with a small one to, like, develop an immunity.
That's
to
what
the
I
poisoning.
Thought, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, because he injects the dog.
Right.
And then the dog survives. And so he saw that, okay, I can develop an immunity because the dog did. And so I'm going to do that.
But
now.
It doesn't really, again, pay off. We don't see an animal, one of those things, sting him later.
Sure.
And have him walk away from it so that we say, oh.
Right. See, hey, he was smart.
It introduces these things. Then it doesn't go any, like, they make kind of a big deal out of, there's a little one that attacks one of the mercenaries and kills him by poisoning him.
Yeah.
And then Riddick says, oh, little ones are the worst. They got the most venom or something.
Right.
Again, doesn't pay off later in the movie where we see another small one ever.
Yeah.
That's the last time we even see one.
It's like, that's when they reminded us. Oh yeah, they're poisonous.
Right.
Oh well.
And for what? Also, I'm a little bit disappointed that I saw the Red Band trailer, and I didn't necessarily seek it out, although maybe I did, but I feel
it's
like...
It's a lot Doug trailers.
Yeah, really. Because it gave away a lot of, not only plot points in the movie, but some of the best moments in the movie, including the way that Jordy Moya is killed off.
Oh, I forgot that one. I don't remember that from a trailer, actually.
Oh, yeah, it was in all, like, the Red Band trailers, and it does suck, because...
That's a secret you want to keep.
And aside from that, the movie doesn't have a lot of those moments. When you think about the way the other mercenaries are killed, it's like, this one gets stung, this one dies off camera, Batista gets an axe in the shoulder.
Sure.
Like, okay, not that exciting.
Yeah.
Your money shot is the Jordy Moya one, and so to spoil it with all your advertising, I think, is ruining one of the surprises.
Agree. I just think with the creatures, and maybe this is where the budget kicks in, where if they just had a bunch of monsters that can regenerate their heads once you cut them off, I'd be like, that'd be kind of cool.
Right.
But then maybe they just didn't have the money to.
Or again, to introduce different kinds of monsters, or to bring the dogs back, because again, he domesticates the one dog, but the rest are murderers.
Sure.
bring those guys back and have one of the mercenaries get killed by those guys.
Right.
You have to demonstrate that, like, Riddick has mastered this planet.
Sure.
And those who haven't will not survive. Right. This is how he manages to keep doing what he's doing. He masters his environment.
Yeah.
And he survives. And other people underestimate him or the hostility of the planets.
Yeah.
And then they die. But the movie doesn't really do that.
It's like, whatever. Right. Let's get on the ship.
Right.
Get the nodes. Hurry.
So, yeah, the whole node thing. Nodes. So I'm definitely shooting some holes in my enjoyment of Riddick. But overall, I actually...
You don't care, right? Because it's another Riddick movie.
Yeah.
And it does all the things that you like. And it's got the tone that you like.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. It's about it.
So it's a weird thing because we're both saying, yeah, we really liked it and we really enjoyed it and we want them to make more. At the same time, like, I'm not going to tell people to go see it, you know? It's not like You're Next where I said, everybody should go see this. It's really fun and you'll have a great time. This is more like, it's good, don't go.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Go see Pitch Black.
Yeah. Right. You need to tell me your qualifications before I'll recommend the movie.
Yeah, there's some prerequisites.
There are.
I don't want to waste your time, so.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Good to have you back, Mark.
Yeah, thanks. I can see in the dark.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see you guys next week.
I'm gonna contact Jason Momoa. It'll be great.
Bye. We'll